welcome everyone to another episode of WA This Week. And today we're coming from the hallowed chambers of the Liberal Party room at Parliament House, a room that's seen much intrigue and politicking over the years, but today just our humble podcast. First up, the issue of the Labor's federal IR bill. Now, I think any of you who have been awake over the last few weeks would know that there has been just solid condemnation of Labor's proposed industrial relation changes on the East Coast, and that is in federal parliament, and for good reason, because what we're going to see is a return to the worst of the industrial practices in the 70s, and that is unions are going to be able to negotiate new pay arrangements, but they're going to be able to bring everyone in an industry, every party in an industry, into that dispute. Now, and in fact, negotiate an outcome based on that industry-wide group. Now, just imagine you're just a small business, you're a medium-sized business, and you're in forced to end up with the same outcome that Coles or Woolworths or Wesfarmers is going to have. I mean, the top end of town can look after itself, and it's very effective at doing that. But as a small business, you're just going to be a victim of that whole process. And what's been very clear is that if the Labor Party goes through with the bill that they've proposed, that small and medium-sized businesses in particular are going to be devastated by this process. And of course, the other part of it is this is going to encourage 70s-style industrial action right across Australia. Now, the miners in Western Australia have been very clear, and you'd all know we all depend critically on mining thriving in this state for our livelihood. It isn't just a few people, you know, in those big businesses who benefit. The whole economy of Western Australia benefits, and that does, you know, flow through to all parts of our economy. And of course, the state government itself derives an enormous amount of revenue. You know, we see the chest thumping from Premier McGowan on how what a great manager he's been of the budget. We all know the truth. Two sources of the money the government has. The first is the GST fix. It was put in by the Federal Liberal Party with great support from the Western Australian members of Parliament and senators. But the other source of that has been the royalties that have come from minerals, in particular iron ore, but also gas and also other commodities that pay royalties. So it's critical. That's what's paying in a large part for the hospitals, for the schools, for the roads, all of those services that we consider to be critical. And that is all going to be put at risk by this IR legislation. Now, normally the big companies, the guys that are at the top end of town, they're normally pretty reticent to come out and criticise the government. They tend to sort of, you know, work behind closed doors. But we've seen firms such as Rio Tinto and other major companies, mining companies in Western Australia, come out and just say what a terrible idea this is for Western Australia and what a terrible idea this is. This is going to threaten future growth and the profitability of their business. So in Parliament on Tuesday, I asked the Premier, I said, Premier, you're someone who puffs your chest out. You like to say that you're here defending Western Australia. Given that so many businesses in Western Australia have said that these federal Labor IR laws are a threat to our state, are you going to stand up for our state and talk to Prime Minister Albanese and urge him not to pass these laws? Do you know what the Premier said in Parliament? The Premier said that these proposed laws have his full support. His full support. So this is the Premier for Western Australia. When it's a COVID pandemic, apparently he's strong for the state. But when it comes to something that's going to threaten the well-being and the livelihood of people in this state, he's just falling behind federal Labor, falling into the pack. It was pathetic from the Premier to do that. This is something that threatens the well-being of most people in the state of Western Australia. He should be out there standing up for Western Australia. Instead, he's hiding. And that absolutely exposes him in terms of his rhetoric about standing up for Western Australia. A topic that that doesn't receive a lot of publicity, but is an area that should, is safety of children. My colleague, colleagues in the upper house, and can I say in particular the Honourable Nick Guerin, who has a passion in this area based on his professional experience, where he was a lawyer who did a lot of work with children and families who were victims of abuse. He does care about that, and I'll also note in particular my colleague, the Honourable Donna Farragher, who has responsibility for early childhood education and children, again has been a passionate advocate caring for children, but it doesn't often make the headlines. But this week a couple of things happened in that space which I think are worth talking about. The first is we had a group of parents come up, and they actually came up and had a meeting with a few members of my team and myself to talk about the issues they face in school. Look, we've got a great education system in Western Australia, but one area where it's falling down is the way that they look after kids who are traumatised, and the way that they protect children from sexual predators. Now, I'm not talking about adults or teachers. I mean, obviously, that is something that needs to be, children need to be protected from that. And I think there's a good focus on that now across our community. This is about children preying on other children, violently assaulting children. Heard the most awful stories, and I won't go through them. They're quite traumatising. But children doing the most dreadful things to other children. And what's apparent talking to these parents is that children that are committing those offences, and those children themselves invariably come from traumatised backgrounds, so they're children that need help. But other children have to be protected from them. And what's apparent is they're not. There is supposed to be a process in place that does it. But it appears that when a child offends at a school, they get moved to another school and the parents aren't told. They're moved into a classroom, and it is not uncommon that these children re-offend in another school. And this is devastating. This destroys the lives of the victims. As I say, I won't dwell on the individual tales because they are really, really quite distressing. But what I want to focus on is the role of government in this. The role of government, yes, it has a role in terms of those children, the offenders, and making sure that they're doing what they can to, hopefully change their behaviour. But most importantly, they've got a role to protect those other children at school who become future victims. Now, this is not being dealt with at all well by the Education Department, and there is considerable room for improvement in that space. And at the very outset, one of the areas that has to be up front is transparency. You wouldn't know that this is occurring because it is not reported. The numbers are not, the statistics are not reported. I came from an industrial background, and there was a mantra in industry, you change what you measure. And that is the basis of making all change. First of all, you know the magnitude of the issue, and then how are you going? Are you getting better? Is it getting worse? Do you need to do more to improve your performance? And in this case, there are no metrics. Now, in other states, such as New South Wales, but other states as well, this is a metric that's reported for assaults of children by other children in the schools, and sexual assaults of children on other children in the schools. That's reported every year. It's tracked, and then the governments report on what they're doing to improve performance and to help minimise the harm to other children. Now, I've asked a question in Parliament today of the Premier about this. The Premier has said he'll consider it, but I hope the Premier considers that. But the issue goes more broadly than that, and that is children who have learning difficulties, children with autism, children with ADHD in other areas. And I know I hear sometimes from people that they're sceptical about these issues, or sceptical about are these really problems or not. But I just encourage people, talk to the parents, talk to them about the stories about their children, and you'll know that there are genuine issues. And what we see is, and it was interesting talking to the parents, what they said was that the public school sector does not deal with children who are different well at all. In fact, the kids fall between the cracks. If those kids have behavioural issues, they often end up being expelled or otherwise moved into areas where they're not learning properly in the schools. But of course, the quiet ones just go through and don't learn and end up with really poor educational outcomes. Now, it was interesting, the group of parents we spoke to, and we spoke to, I think, five parents here, in every case, when they moved their children into the private school system, which the parents did out of desperation, not rich people, but they just desperately wanted to do something to help give their children a good future, what they said was that the private school system dealt with these issues much better. So what that tells me is not that I want everyone to be with kids who have those developmental issues moving their children into the private school sector. We need the state school sector to step up and provide better resources in this space. As I said, you know, this is one of these topics. It's not sort of sexy. It's not political, the sort of thing you go out onto the hustings on. But it's a critically important area for a very large number of children in the state of Western Australia. And what's very clear is that the state government is ignoring this as a priority, and they need to put much more focus and much more resource into that. Just a little further on into the issue with children, some of you may know that there have been some changes going through Parliament, legislation going through Parliament around working with children checks. And what's been apparent is that there are some real gaps in that system, and the government's brought forward what is largely good legislation to close those gaps, to make sure that you capture all of the categories of people who shouldn't be working with children, making sure that this is a really robust process so that you don't have adults who've been guilty of child sex offences and predatory behaviour working with children. I think for all of you who are parents, that's what you want for your kids. You want to know they're safe, whether it's at a sporting club, whether it's at their school, you know, whether it's as part of a swimming team. But what my colleague, the Honourable Nick Guerin, revealed through questions in the Upper House was that, in fact, there were seven people who had committed offences which, under the changes to the legislation, would prevent them from working with children. Yet under this legislation, they were going to be allowed to continue to work with children. Imagine that. Behaviours that are deemed completely unacceptable and unacceptable for anyone who'd committed those offences to work with children, yet seven of them are going to be allowed to continue to work with children. Now, because of the revelation of that fact, and because of an excellent amendment that the Honourable Nick Guerin put forward, the Labor Party have actually accepted that, and now those seven people who shouldn't be working with children won't be allowed to. I think that's a great outcome. Again, this isn't affecting, you know, a large number of people, but I think that it's good work by the Honourable Nick Guerin and his colleagues in the Upper House to get the Labor Party. And look, I congratulate the Labor Party for taking on that amendment and passing it, because that's going to make our children safer. And just a last little topic this week. Yesterday in Parliament, we have a business in Parliament called Private Members Business, and that's where the opposition gets to talk about issues that concern them. You pick a topic each time, typically, and we get 2 hours of debate and the government gets an hour to respond. And this week we did it on health. Any of you, and I know a lot of you, some of you are in the medical world and in the hospital system or otherwise you interact with it. Anyone who interacts with anyone who's in the medical systems knows that this is a system in crisis. And I've talked about this on a few occasions, and I won't repeat all of my comments from before, but one of the responses we get from the government time after time after time is that they're making record investment in the health system. And it's always good to go to facts. You know, I've said it many times, this is a Labor government. They're good on spin, they're hopeless on delivery. And that's true right across the portfolio areas, but no more so than in health. So I looked at just a couple of simple ones. The capital spend on health. So during the Barnett government, they spent $5.9 billion on capital investment program. And you may recall some of them, but the Fiona Stanley Hospital, a major tertiary hospital constructed and commissioned during that period. A substantial $200 million, I think it was, expansion of the Joondalup campus. The new Perth Children's Hospital, a world-class children's hospital with a substantial increase in the number of beds and ancillary facilities in that hospital for helping children deal with a range of medical issues. The new Midland Hospital, a public-private partnership between St John's and the state government, building a major tertiary hospital in Midland. It may interest you to know that that hospital in Midland actually handles as many or more emergency patients as St Charles Gardner Hospital, but delivered in the eastern suburbs, out closer to where people live, delivered by this, delivered by the previous Liberal coalition government. And another one, you know, an inconvenient truth for the Labor Party, but establishing the Curtin Medical School at Midland as well. You know, we see with this Labor government, they're extremely tribal when it comes to how they allocate resources. Happy to spend money and devote money to pet causes and to their electorates, but then absolutely tribal in not doing anything to support an area that they don't have a member in. But the Liberal National Coalition government negotiated with Curtin University, established the Curtin Health campus out at Midland, so kids out there who don't have to travel miles to get to campuses essentially close to Perth can get trained, and encouraging a whole generation of kids who otherwise might not even consider medicine to take it up. What a great outcome. And of course, a massive expenditure in regional hospitals. What's Labor's investment over their term of government? Remember, they're 5.5 years into their term. So we had $4.5 billion over the 8 years of the Barnett government. This Labor government, $1 billion. Some record. Record low, I would say. And you all know the consequence of that, and that is we do not have the hospital facilities that we need in this state. And of course, if we look at operational expenditure increase again, a paltry increase in this government, and again, we're seeing the result. We don't have the medical services that you need in this state. So, you know, when you hear Labor spruiking their record spend, you can just treat that with the scepticism it deserves. No records, a hospital system that is in chaos. Look, thanks for listening this week. Four topics, so perhaps a little bit longer, but if you're just hearing this for the first time, you can subscribe to this as a podcast. Look up on any of your podcasting apps and look for WA This Week and you'll find it. And you can also get the video version on Facebook, Spotify or YouTube. You just search Dr. David Honey and it'll come up. Please share it with your friends, get it out there. You know, we've got a growing audience and it's really good to be able to get this message out, the slightly longer form of communication. I think beats the 15 to 30 second grabs we get on the normal media. And so please share it with your friends. And as I say every time, please share your comments with us as well. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that. Thank you.